Dean, I want to talk to you about this idea I've had, which I'm calling the bacon fallacy.
Okay, no, I wasn't expecting that. The bacon fallacy.
Yeah. So this is a story that we tell ourselves that I think is a fallacy. It's like we have a wrong idea in our heads that prevents us from building certain good habits, right? So think about it. Let's basically start with the idea of the bacon fallacy, right? So I eat a predominantly plant-based diet. Mm-hmm. And I do that for ethical reasons, but also, you know, a few years ago, I did a lot of research into nutrition, trying to find out what is healthy food, actually, right? How do I feed myself healthily? And I came to the conclusion that basically I want to be eating mostly plants for this. Now, when people learn this about me, usually the reaction is something like, oh, I could never do that because I couldn't give up on bacon. Yeah, I couldn't give up. And it could be bacon or it could be cheese or whatever. You know, there's going to be some food where it's like, I'm just going to use bacon as an example.
Well, it's a big one.
Right, it is. Yeah. So, you know, I could never do that because I couldn't give up on bacon, right? And you know, the thing is, even if the way you eat is healthier, I wouldn't want to do it because I want to enjoy my life. Mm-hmm. And that is the fallacy that I want to pick up on. So what I mean is that, and we see this same story in many examples. So maybe you hear about the lifestyle of an athlete or a model, or I don't know, you're just someone who's very fit and skinny, and you're like, oh my God, this is what they eat and this is how they train. Oh, I could never do that because I want to enjoy my life. Mm. You hear someone saying, oh, you know, I managed to clear my skin. I feel much better. I'm slim. How did you do it? Well, I stopped eating sugar. Oh, I could never do that. What? Well, no cakes, no pastries. I could never do that because I want to enjoy my life. Okay? Mm. And the fallacy is in the because I want to enjoy my life part. So I believe that the mistake we make is that we assume, we make certain assumptions about what it means to enjoy your life, mm-hmm. right? Now, look, before we go into this, I'm just curious, you know, have you experienced something similar either from yourself or from other people? Because you've also done things like you've quit alcohol, yeah, for example.
That was
right?
That's the biggest one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Is that I can't, yeah, I don't want to because my life, no fun. Life will be boring.
Yeah. I want to have fun. That's why I can't stop drinking alcohol.
And many other reasons.
Yeah.
And after a year of that, you kind of go, definitely not true. Mm-hmm. And the reverse is true. And I'm sure that's where this is going. Yeah.
Well, we'll see, right? Yeah. We'll see.
I think
we'll... It'll be interesting to relate your own experience with quitting alcohol, but I think that's that's a good one, right? Where same reason, like, well, why don't you want to quit? Well, I want to have fun, mm-hmm. and we associate the consumption of alcohol with fun. Mm-hmm. So here's from a human behavior perspective. I want to encourage everyone to think about this from a human behavior perspective. When it comes to habits, so how do we? Because these things are a question of habits, right? It's a matter of habits, how you eat, for example. And it's also a question of habits if we think about that, let's say that very fit person mm-hmm. who trains hard and doesn't eat certain things and so on. That is also a matter of habits. And habits, what we know from the science of how habits are formed is that there is basically a habit loop. And there's three components to the habit loop. There's the trigger or the cue, right? The thing that triggers a behavior. Then there's the behavior itself. And then there's a reward that reinforces the behavior. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so an example of a habit that we're all very familiar with is the trigger is you feel slightly bored. That cues you into behavior reaching for your phone. Mm-hmm. And you open whatever your app of choice is, you scroll through some feed, you see a nice picture, you tap on a like or whatever, which gives you like a little bit of entertainment, gives you a little bit of relief. That's the reward. Mm-hmm. And because that felt good, next time you feel slightly bored or you're trying to avoid some work or something, the trigger leads to the same behavior, leads to the same reward and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
And this is true of all habits, right? We have, as humans, we have a concept of good habits and bad habits. But like your brain doesn't know that. Your nervous system doesn't know that. Yeah. So you know, the simplest habit loop is you feel hungry, you eat some food, now you don't feel hungry anymore, and it's, you know, tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's a habit loop, right? Okay, so that's how habit works. Now, the key point here is that there's always a reward. Habits are reinforced via reward. So when someone is doing something that you think is unrewarding, that's a mistaken belief. If they're consistently doing it, if they're not being like coerced into doing it, right? Obviously, this doesn't apply to people, I don't know, you know, forced labor in a prison camp or something, right? But if you're looking at someone who's doing something and they're not being coerced into doing it, there is a reward, right? So if you take, again, if you take the super fit person, doesn't eat bacon, doesn't eat sugar, trains a lot, and you think I could never do that because I want to enjoy my life. But the truth is their training habits and their eating habits are reinforced with a reward, just like your bacon eating habits. Okay.
What are they?
So the first thing to think about is, well, obviously doing something like training can be rewarding in itself, right? It can be rewarding. And I think that's maybe something you experienced as well, right? We went to the gym together for a while. How was your experience of that? Like, did you find that activity rewarding in itself right away or after a while? Or how was that for you?
At the time, I can't say I felt it. But when I left and went to travel for a bit, and the habit just fell to pieces. Mm-hmm. And I tried to get back to the habit and I couldn't.
Mm.
And I, ever since, have just been going, I can't wait till Shane's shoulder's fixed and we're back and I can go to the gym and be there, like, in that same setup.
Right.
Because I realized that setup was, it felt good and I got the results I needed from it.
Right.
And I haven't been able to properly set that up again.
Right. So that's interesting, right? Because basically what it sounds like is that the specific configuration that we had of like going to the gym together,
yes,
before a work session and so on, something about that was rewarding. Very so that you so. Found it easy to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And as soon as basically you break the loop,
mm-hmm.
you weren't able to reestablish that loop in a different set of circumstances.
Yeah. And it was, as you said, multiple things. It was the togetherness, it was the location, the convenience of the weights being actual weights, because I tried to, as soon as I went home, I tried to make it out of water bottles, and it was like the first 3 days it was like and then it broke, and then I taped it, and then within a week of that it was over. It was gone. I was like, oh well, I'll just do push-ups, and that didn't last. The satisfaction of the process was gone.
And that's an important factor, right? Because the more inconvenient something is, the harder, like the more effort you need to put in to get the same reward, essentially, right? And this is also the reason why I like to go to the gym, even though I have a pretty good home gym. Because for me, I can do a 20-minute workout at home, no problem. Beyond that, it becomes difficult. When I'm at a gym where there's way more weights and stuff to do, I can easily do an hour-long workout, right? But again, that's like, it kind of shows the same thing, right? There's something intrinsically rewarding about exercising, but you have to design essentially a habit loop that works for you, where you have the trigger, you have the behavior, and then it feels rewarding, and that is in balance.
Yeah.
Right. And for me, a gym makes that easier for long or more intense workouts than just working out at home. Even though, of course, in principle, you could just do push-ups and stuff all day, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the basic idea of how a habit works. Now, something like a really hard workout can be satisfying and rewarding. And for me personally, I find an intense workout with heavy weights a lot more rewarding than an easier workout, for example. But that also, what this contains is the insight that there's more than one kind of reward. And bacon and sugar and things like that are the... is kind of the fast food version of a reward, right? Yeah. So, and this is I think where the bacon fallacy becomes, you know, it's a problem that's growing in our culture, because our environment is so oversaturated with these very quick, easy,
stimulating,
highly stimulating rewards. So that's the case with something like bacon or sugar glazed donut or something, right? You bite into it and you have an immediate, like, extreme sensation.
Mm.
And so you have a bit, like, a short spike of high reward right away.
Yeah.
And the same is unfortunately true for our, like, information and entertainment environment.
Big time, right? Yeah.
So it's very easy now to get this short spike of something that is, you know, something like TikTok, you know, 10 seconds, which is funny. And then another thing, which is, you know, some sexy girl dancing, right? And it's often the very over the top. Mm. So it's not, and so this is what I basically want to lead to, is think about what the difference is between this kind of reward that is like a short spike versus other kinds of reward. Mm. So you have, you have something like, again, if we take the TikTok example, right? You have, the sexy girl dancing for 30 seconds, right? It's usually like over the top, right? She's voluptuous, wearing a bikini, doing a very seductive dance for, 30 seconds. It's like this strong spike. There's another kind, like the other version of that same thing. That's the fast food version, mm-hmm. right? The other version of that is something that's erotic.
Mm.
But that probably takes longer than 30 seconds, right? Mm. Something can be subtly erotic. That can be very enjoyable, but it's a different kind of thing, right? And it's the same with food, right? You can bite into the donut, immediate taste explosion. But there's other kinds of food, right? If you go to a super fancy restaurant, you'll probably experience a different kind of enjoyment, right? It'll probably, it's not just going to be super salty and crispy, right? It's not just going to be sugar glazed.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be more subtle. But there's, and it's almost like you have to pay more attention. Whereas you can eat a packet of crisps while you're watching some other stuff. Putting
into it, right?
Yeah. Whereas if you take the, you know, Michelin star meal and you eat it while watching Netflix, it's like you're doing it wrong because you're missing out on the meal. You're not even noticing how great this meal is, right? But again, that's like, it's like the slow burn, higher quality version, which is, and nobody would say that a Michelin star meal is somehow inferior to a packet of crisps, right? Mm. But it's a different kind of enjoyment.
Yeah. There's definitely a time scale there that I see. So the shorter it is, like something immediate, like TikTok is, it's quick. I can do it for 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the shorter it is, the more addictive or the more accessible it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet, like food is not as quickly as accessible, but it is also fairly quickly accessible.
Mm-hmm.
But you can scale that up over longer periods of time too, and it's just as bad. And that's where the alcohol one made sense to me now.
Mm.
Because it's not something... I'm bored, or I've got this, or I need to escape from a bad situation. I've had a long day. It's like, you've got to wait till 5 o'clock. But it's the immediateness of the feeling that you get from, I don't know, you drink a couple of things. It's like, it's the effect is immediate and you didn't have to do much.
Yeah.
And that's what I can see. So yeah, it's the time span of the effect.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't put in.
Yeah. And of course, it's also addictive, right? It's also habit forming by itself, which is an added factor. There's like a boost to the habit formingness of it, right?
Mm.
But I think also with something like alcohol, because it's a consciousness changing substance,
which
it has a clear taste cue.
Mm-hmm.
So when you drink alcohol, you know that you're drinking alcohol. And so even if it doesn't hit you right away, like the high, right, doesn't hit you right away, but you get confirmation that it's coming right away, you know, because of what you're tasting.
Mm-hmm.
So even there's this rapid quality to it, I think. Yeah.
And the reward is that it's like the escape
rather than
the I'm present.
And even, you know, I think I actually, now that I think about it, alcohol is a complicated one, right?
It
because,
is.
Because, so I also, as a disclaimer, right, I don't drink alcohol. I've never been drunk. So I don't speak of experience here, but how I understand it is that alcohol can be, it can be a social lubricant.
Mm.
And I understand that people want help with that, right?
Mm.
And so it can serve a possibly important role in socialization, but it's just very easy for it to tip over.
Mm.
So in a way, right, the ideal, possibly the ideal philosopher citizens, let's say, would not eschew alcohol. They would use alcohol, but they would use it in moderation as a social lubricant for that purpose.
Mm.
But what, of course, happens with real people is that, like you said, we use it as an escape.
Mm.
Because it's easy to keep going. But also, yeah, you're upset about things. There's pain in your life that you're trying to get away from. And this thing numbs the pain, right? And then it can turn into this snowball of a bad habit. But yeah, this idea of the fast food version of a reward versus mm-hmm. the whatever, let's say the high quality version of the same reward. And probably it's a spectrum, right? It's a spectrum where you can get anything in between. And this is something I really want to encourage people to think about. Like, what are the high quality, like Michelin star kinds of rewarding experiences that you like in your life that you've experienced?
Mm.
Because I think one of the things that's happening is that we are being distracted away from that kind of reward by all this junk food reward, right? And so to give you some examples for me, so first of all, to go back to the fitness example, right? I find it rewarding to work out. I also know how important working out is for my long-term satisfaction and mental health.
Mm.
So there's also like a long-term slow burn effect. And I noticed that so recently I had an accident, right? And I have had my arm in a sling for 2 months. I haven't been able to work out. And I don't feel like myself now because, you know, I've like shrunk down and just I'm not embodied. It's like I don't fully live in my body. It just doesn't feel right to me.
Mm.
I think that this is probably not unique to me. I think that a lot of people just don't know what that feels like, right? Like that, what it feels like to really be in your body, right?
Mm.
So again, this is not an instant satisfaction. I go to the gym once and it's back.
Mm.
It is the way I feel when I'm well-trained, when I'm using my body a lot. It just, that is a really slow burn, but deep satisfaction that I get, right? Another example I was talking about earlier, the idea, yeah, for example, I could never stop eating sugar because I want to have fun, right? Well, a lot of people experience like brain fog based on sugar that goes away when you stop eating sugar, which again, like it's not an immediate satisfaction, but it's just a different way of being. It's, I have greater mental clarity here. You know, I just feel lighter somehow. It's the complete opposite of the immediate sugar spike, right?
Yeah.
But it is a form of satisfaction, and it is something that can be very rewarding. And there's countless other examples. Another one for me is, for example, you know, I really enjoy long conversations,
mm.
and there's something in a long in-person conversation that, you know, you can't get it from other forms of communication. I can be texting with someone all day long, and it's nothing like that. And my concern is that I think, like I said, these short spikes of junk food, of the junk food version of rewards are displacing other kinds of rewards.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. And it's very hard to change that because of the addictive nature of the junk food versions.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so easy compared to the other one. Well, it's not to say that the others are hard, though.
Mm.
I think it's not like one's easy, one's hard. It's like, no, one's normal and the other one's easy. And that's why I like the way you say it's displacing that out the way.
Yeah. And it's about availability, right? I think this is part of the problem where if we take the conversation example, look, sending someone a quick text is just so much more available than having a long conversation with someone. Having a long conversation with someone requires that you somehow meet up at the same place at the same time and that both of you have enough time and so on, right? It's just logistic. It's not that it's hard to have that conversation. It's just it takes more to make it happen.
Yeah.
And most of these higher quality rewarding experiences have something like that. It takes more time. It takes a bit more investment. It's just not as convenient. And in the absence of all this quick stimulation, you would be more motivated. You'd find it easier to be like, oh, I'm bored. Let me call some friends or something. Let's hang out, right? Whereas now you're not bored because you're constantly stimulated, right? So to bring that back to where we started, to this whole fallacy of the reason I couldn't do without the bacon, the sugar, the TikTok, the whatever, is because I want to enjoy my life. It's a fallacy because your life might actually be so much more enjoyable on a much deeper level if you, in fact, stop eating bacon and sugar and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're missing. We are thinking that this person, I'll just go with the example again, you know, this fit person, this athlete is in great shape and stuff, but look, he's training all the time. He only eats lettuce. This is terrible. We think this is a life of great sacrifice, right? But actually, this person's probably having a great time, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we don't realize.
Yeah.
It's like you can replace, sure, yeah, he's not eating cake and stuff, right? But you can replace that kind of pleasure with other kinds of really rewarding experiences that give your life profound quality, right? And again, remember that there's always a reward. There is always a reward. Otherwise, people don't do stuff, right? Mm. Unless it's at gunpoint, people don't do stuff that's not rewarding.
Yeah.
So this is, I think this is like the main message to take away, right? When you catch yourself making that excuse, when you catch yourself saying, well, the reason I don't do this is because it's this great sacrifice and I would suffer if I did it. It's not true.
Mm.
If you see people doing it voluntarily, it is rewarding, right? That's...
Yeah, no, I know firsthand from my experience of that gym. As you said, for me also, I've been a bit out of it because of the travels and whatnot. And I'm not as mentally, I don't want to say I'm unhappy, but I'm not as stable or as great as I was. I wasn't walking through life like everything's going to be fine. And it was just such an easy thing to do every day.
Right.
And the reverse is true for the alcohol, which I did 1.5 years absolutely clean. And then there was, in the travels, there was like a little slip up and I slid down to like, oh wow, this is just destroying my life so quickly.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have, I'm glad that happened because it gave me the perspective of how good my life was without it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm really glad that happened because it was like, now I have the proof to myself.
Yeah, I've had this experience as well. It's like now, right? Because I haven't been able to train and I'm relatively out of shape and this experience of, oh my God, this is what it's like.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is kind of shocking, right? Because you also get used to the other thing, of course.
Mm.
But so
once you've experienced that, what I'm saying is it's very difficult to go back to the quick fix.
Yeah.
So it's good to have that in and reverse and then feel it from the other side, because now I know that the quick fix, the cheap fix, the junk food grosses me out, right? Even though I feel the effect or something, it's like, I choose the other.
Yeah, and you can
choose the other.
Yeah, yeah. You can. I think that you can learn to, you can basically learn to want the higher quality kind of stuff.
Exactly.
You can learn to want it. What I mean by that is, again, we often feel like we're just a victim of that. We're just like, oh, I just want bacon and donuts. I can't do anything about it, right? I just have these desires.
Yeah. I just want not it.
Yeah, exactly. You can get to the point where it's just like, I just don't want this and I can't do anything about it. That's what it feels like, right? And for me, it's similar with basically with all of the good habits that I have that lead to good life outcomes, it is... The case that I wouldn't want to live without them, right? So, you know, for example, like reading a lot of books, like it's not that I force myself to read a lot of books. If anything, I wish I could read more books, right?
Yeah.
So, and of course, I could also like, your habits are pliable. Like I could turn myself into a junk food addicted couch potato if I wanted to, right? Mm-hmm. So this idea that I can't help myself, I want it so much, is a fallacy either way. So if you feel like I could never live without donuts, you're wrong. And if I feel like, well, I really don't want to do that, I'm also wrong. Because your brain is plastic. You know, you can shape your own destiny through your behavior and through your habits. But it's that side of the Bacon fallacy that I think is important to realize, right? Mm. It's you think that you can't live without this stuff. You think that this is the kind, this is how to enjoy your life. But it's not true. You're basically lying to yourself. So I think that would be the takeaway, right? If, mm-hmm. if you examine your own life and your own beliefs, like where are you falling into the Bacon fallacy? Where are you blocking yourself from experiencing something and attempting something because you feel like, no, I can't live without this, essentially, right? Mm. Where are you making this association where you think the junk food version of reward is what makes life worth living? Because I think you'll find that that's not true. And the other thing, just to get back to that, is think about what are the high quality, slow burn, rewarding experiences that you want more of in your life? And what can you do to make those happen? Because that's something I also noticed for myself. Like if I'm not deliberate about that, it can easily slip away, you know? Like I can be in a situation where I go, hold on, one of my favorite things to do is have long conversations. And I haven't had a long conversation in like months.
Yeah.
It's just easy to get distracted. It's easy to get too busy, right, with other stuff. And so sometimes...
For me, that's the... From the last 2 years, it's like the skill building.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when I don't have a new skill, even the movement skill, like when I stop learning something new, that's when I feel that. Because learning a skill is obviously takes that time and it takes the effort. But once you have the skill and you get to show it or use it, it's just the most rewarding thing.
Mm.
Like literally probably the most rewarding thing I know.
Mm.
And that is the perfect opposite. So instead of, rewarding yourself by you cleaned the house or watch an episode of Netflix, it's like, no, that's 45 minutes you could learn another skill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to, in some cases, you have to, right? You can ideally turn this into a habit. You can turn these things into a habit that are rewarding to you and lead to good life outcomes.
Mm.
And that would be things like exercising, eating well, reading books, learning skills, and so on, right? This is all a matter of habits, and the more of these habits you have, they have all these positive knock-on effects in your life, right?
Mm.
And yeah, think about how good of a deal that is. You experience a deeper sense of satisfaction, and you have positive life outcomes along with it, right? That's pretty amazing. And I think that's how you should think of it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what life design is about, really. It's not that you are making all these sacrifices. Oh, I'm torturing myself with all this stuff in order to get the thing, right? Mm-hmm. No. No, there's a better way, right? But also, there are things that you need to cultivate as not to lose them, right?
Mm.
Such as making sure you have these long conversations or whatever it is for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically the idea. This is the Bacon fallacy. This is what I invite you to think about. And I'd also be interested to hear, you know, any questions about this, any examples of, you know, do you have examples where you have the Bacon fallacy in your life or examples where you've overcome the Bacon fallacy? I'd love to know about that. So go ahead and leave a comment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you enjoyed this episode, send it to someone who would also enjoy it. And that is all. See you next time.
Ciao.